In Joel chapter 3, verse 2, it is written, I will also gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat, and I will enter into judgment with them there on account of my people, my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations. They have also divided up my land. Today, as we do a deep dive in Nehemiah chapter 5 through 7, we also connect that and relate that to what's happening on the world stage today concerning Israel. We look at an article, Dividing Israel Equals Defying God, the World's Dangerous Path Toward Judgment. This September, the world will take one more dangerous step toward disaster. At the United Nations General Assembly, a growing coalition of nations, once counted as friends of Israel, will formally push to recognize a Palestinian state. Canada, France, the United Kingdom, nations who once stood against terrorism, are now preparing to reward it with legitimacy, flags, and UN seats. Make no mistake, this is not about peace, it's about power. It's about appeasing an ideology that has raised its children to hate Jews and murder Israelis. And it's about something even more sobering for believers. This is another step to fulfilling Bible prophecy. Listen in as we unpack Nehemiah chapter 5 through 7 and relate it to the global stage of what's happening with Israel today. Welcome to the Daily Audio Torah. Today is August 12th. Now let's continue our journey reading through the entire Bible in 1 year. This week we are reading from the New Living Translation for the Old Testament and for the New Testament. Deuteronomy 5, 1 to 15. Moses called all the people of Israel together and said, Listen carefully, Israel. Hear the decrees and regulations I am giving you today so you may learn them and obey them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Mount Sinai. The Lord did not make this covenant with our ancestors, but with all of us who are alive today. At the mountain, the Lord spoke to you face to face from the heart of the fire. I stood as an intermediary between you and the Lord, for you were afraid of the fire and did not want to approach the mountain. He spoke to me, and I passed his words on to you. This is what he said: I am the Lord your God who rescued you from the land of Egypt, the place of your slavery. You must not have any other God but me. You must not make for yourself an idol of any kind, or an image of anything in the heavens or on the earth or in the sea. You must not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God who will not tolerate your affection for any other gods. I lay the sins of the parents upon their children. The entire family is affected, even children in the third and fourth generations of those who reject me. But I lavish unfailing love for 1,000 generations on those who love me and obey my commands. You must not misuse the name of the Lord your God. The Lord will not let you go unpunished if you misuse his name. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath day of rest, dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. This includes you, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, your oxen and donkeys and other livestock, and any foreigners living among you. All your male and female servants must rest as you do. Remember that you were once slaves in Egypt, but the Lord your God brought you out with his strong hand and powerful arm. That is why the Lord your God has commanded you to rest on the Sabbath day. Nehemiah 3, 15 to 5, 13. Shallum, son of Kol-Hoza, the leader of the Mizpah district, repaired the fountain gate. He rebuilt it, roofed it, hung its doors, and installed its bolts and bars. Then he repaired the wall of the pool of Siloam near the king's garden, and he rebuilt the wall as far as the stairs that descend from the city of David. Next to him was Nehemiah, son of Azbuk, the leader of half the district of Beth-Zur. He rebuilt the wall to a place opposite the royal cemetery as far as the water reservoir and the house of the warriors. Next was a group of Levites working under the supervision of Rehum, son of Bani. Then came Hashabiah, the leader of half the district of Keilah, who supervised the building of the wall on behalf of his own district. Next, down the line were his countrymen led by Binui, son of Henadad, the leader of the other half of the district of Keilah. Next to them, Ezer, son of Jeshua, the leader of Mizpah, repaired another section of wall opposite the armory by the buttress. Next to him was Baruch, son of Zabai, who repaired an additional section from the buttress to the door of the home of Eliashib, the high priest. Meremoth, son of Uriah, and grandson of Hakaz, rebuilt another section of the wall extending from a point opposite the door of Eliashib's house to the side of the house. Then came the priests from the surrounding region. After them, Benjamin, Hashub, and Azariah, son of Messiah, and grandson of Ananiah, repaired the sections next to their own houses. Next was Binui, son of Henadad, who rebuilt another section of the wall from Azariah's house to the buttress and the corner. Halal, son of Uzai, carried on the work from a point opposite the buttress and the corner to the upper tower that projects from the king's house beside the court of the guard. Next to him were Padiah, son of Parosh, and the temple servants living on the hill of Ophel, who repaired the wall as far as the water gate toward the east and the projecting tower. Then came the people of Tekoa, who repaired another section opposite the great projecting tower and over to the wall of Ophel. The priests repaired the wall up the hill from the horse gate, each one doing the section immediately opposite his own house. Next, Zadok, son of Immer, also rebuilt the wall next to his own house, and beyond him was Shemaiah, son of Shechaniah, the gatekeeper of the east gate. Next, Hananiah, son of Shelemiah, and Hanun, the sixth son of Zaloth, repaired another section, while Meshulam, son of Berechiah, rebuilt the wall next to his own house. Malkijah, one of the goldsmiths, repaired the wall as far as the housing for the temple servants and merchants opposite the inspection gate. Then he continued as far as the upper room at the corner. The other goldsmiths and merchants repaired the wall from that corner to the sheep gate. Sanballat was very angry when he learned that we were rebuilding the wall. He flew into a rage and mocked the Jews, saying in front of his friends and the Samaritan army officers, "What does this bunch of poor, feeble Jews think they are doing? Do they think they can build the wall in a day if they offer enough sacrifices? Look at those charred stones they are pulling out of the rubbish and using again." Tobiah the Ammonite, who was standing beside him, remarked, "That stone wall would collapse if even a fox walked along the top of it." Then I prayed, "Hear us, O God, for we are being mocked. May their scoffing fall back on their own heads, and may they themselves become captives in a foreign land. Do not ignore their guilt. Do not blot out their sins, for they have provoked you to anger here in the presence of the builders." At last, the wall was completed to half its original height around the entire city, for the people had worked very hard. But when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs, Ammonites and Ashdodites heard that the work was going ahead and that the gaps in the wall were being repaired, they became furious. They all made plans to come and fight against Jerusalem and to bring about confusion there. But we prayed to our God and guarded the city day and night to protect ourselves. Then the people of Judah began to complain that the workers were becoming tired. There was so much rubbish to be moved that we could never get it done by ourselves. Meanwhile, our enemies were saying, before they know what's happening, we will swoop down on them and kill them and end their work. The Jews who lived near the enemy came and told us again and again, they will come from all directions and attack us. So I placed armed guards behind the lowest part of the wall in the exposed areas. I stationed the people to stand guard by families armed with swords, spears, and bows. Then, as I looked over the situation, I called together the leaders and the people and said to them, don't be afraid of the enemy. Remember the Lord, who is great and glorious, and fight for your friends, your family, and your homes. When our enemies heard that we knew of their plans and that God had frustrated them, we all returned to our work on the wall. But from then on, only half my men worked while the other half stood guard with spears, shields, bows, and coats of mail. The officers stationed themselves behind the people of Judah who were building the wall. The common laborers carried on their work with one hand supporting their load and one hand holding a weapon. All the builders had a sword belted to their side. The trumpeter stayed with me to sound the alarm. Then I explained to the nobles and officials and all the people, the work is very spread out and we are widely separated from each other along the wall. When you hear the blast of the trumpet, rush to wherever it is sounding. Then our God will fight for us. We worked early and late, from sunrise to sunset, and half the men were always on guard. I also told everyone living outside the walls to move into Jerusalem. That way, they and their servants could go on guard duty at night as well as work during the day. During this time, none of us, not I, nor my relatives, nor my servants, nor the guards who were with me, ever took off our clothes. We carried our weapons with us at all times, even when we went for water. About this time, some of the men and their wives raised a cry of protest against their fellow Jews. They were saying, we have such large families. We need more money just so we can buy the food we need to survive. Others said, we have mortgaged our fields, vineyards, and homes to get food during the famine. And others said, we have already borrowed to the limit on our fields and vineyards to pay our taxes. We belong to the same family and our children are just like theirs. Yet, we must sell our children into slavery just to get enough money to live. We have already sold some of our daughters and we are helpless to do anything about it, for our fields and vineyards are already mortgaged to others. When I heard their complaints, I was very angry. After thinking about the situation, I spoke out against these nobles and officials. I told them, you are oppressing your own relatives by charging them interest when they borrow money. Then I called a public meeting to deal with the problem. At the meeting, I said to them, the rest of us are doing all we can to redeem our Jewish relatives who have had to sell themselves to pagan foreigners, but you are selling them back into slavery again. How often must we redeem them? And they had nothing to say in their defense. Then I pressed further. What you are doing is not right. Should you not walk in the fear of our God in order to avoid being mocked by enemy nations? I myself, as well as my brothers and my workers, have been lending the people money and grain, but now let us stop this business of loans. You must restore their fields, vineyards, olive groves, and homes to them this very day. Repay the interest you charged on their money, grain, wine, and olive oil. Then they replied, we will give back everything and demand nothing more from the people. We will do as you say. Then I called the priests and made the nobles and officials formally vow to do what they had promised. I shook out the fold of my robe and said, if you fail to keep your promise, may God shake you from your homes and from your property. The whole assembly responded, Amen, and they praised the Lord, and the people did as they had promised. 1 Corinthians 7:25 to 40. Now, about the young women who are not yet married, I, Paul, do not have a command from the Lord for them. But the Lord, in his kindness, has given me wisdom that can be trusted, and I will share it with you. Because of the present crisis, I think it is best to remain just as you are. If you have a wife, do not end the marriage. If you do not have a wife, do not get married. But if you do get married, it is not a sin. And if a young woman gets married, it is not a sin. However, I am trying to spare you the extra problems that come with marriage. Now, let me say this, dear brothers and sisters. The time that remains is very short, so husbands should not let marriage be their major concern. Happiness or sadness or wealth should not keep anyone from doing God's work. Those in frequent contact with the things of the world should make good use of them without becoming attached to them. For this world and all it contains will pass away. In everything you do, I want you to be free from the concerns of this life. An unmarried man can spend his time doing the Lord's work and thinking how to please him. But a married man can't do that so well. He has to think about his earthly responsibilities and how to please his wife. His interests are divided. In the same way, a woman who is no longer married or has never been married can be more devoted to the Lord in body and in spirit, while the married woman must be concerned about her earthly responsibilities and how to please her husband. I am saying this for your benefit, not to place restrictions on you. I want you to do whatever will help you serve the Lord best, with as few distractions as possible. But if a man thinks he ought to marry his fiancée because he has trouble controlling his passions and time is passing, it is all right. It is not a sin. Let them marry. But if he has decided firmly not to marry, and there is no urgency and he can control his passion, he does well not to marry. So the person who marries does well, and the person who doesn't marry does even better. A wife is married to her husband as long as he lives. If her husband dies, she is free to marry whomever she wishes. But this must be a marriage acceptable to the Lord. But in my opinion, it will be better for her if she doesn't marry again. And I think I am giving you counsel from the God Spirit when I say this. Psalm 32, 1 to 11. Oh, what joy for those whose rebellion is forgiven, whose sin is put out of sight. Yes, what joy for those whose record the Lord has cleared of sin, whose lives are lived in complete honesty. When I refused to confess my sin, I was weak and miserable, and I groaned all day long. Day and night, your hand of discipline was heavy on me. My strength evaporated like water in the summer heat. Finally, I confessed all my sins to you and stopped trying to hide them. I said to myself, I will confess my rebellion to the Lord, and you forgave me. All my guilt is gone. Therefore, let all the godly confess their rebellion to you while there is time, that they may not drown in the floodwaters of judgment. For you are my hiding place. You protect me from trouble. You surround me with songs of deliverance. The Lord says, I will guide you along the best pathway for your life. I will advise you and watch over you. Do not be like a senseless horse or mule that needs a bit and bridle to keep it under control. Many sorrows come to the wicked, but unfailing love surrounds those who trust the Lord. So rejoice in the Lord and be glad, all you who obey him. Shout for joy, all you whose hearts are pure. Proverbs 21:5-7. Good planning and hard work lead to prosperity, but hasty shortcuts lead to poverty. Wealth created by lying is a vanishing mist and a deadly trap. Because the wicked refuse to do what is just, their violence boomerangs and destroys them. I'd like to speak to you today from our reading from Nehemiah chapter 3 through 5. And as we watch and follow along with the unfolding story of how the Jewish people came back to Israel and to Jerusalem to rebuild the wall around the city and to begin rebuilding the temple, we see some tremendous pushback coming against them. And so we see in chapter 4, Sanballat became very angry when he learned that they were rebuilding the wall. He flew into a rage and mocked the Jews, saying in front of his friends and the Samaritan army officers, "What does this bunch of poor, feeble Jews think they are doing? Do they think they can build the wall in a day if they offer enough sacrifices? Look at those charred stones they are pulling out of the rubbish and using again." So I'm going to relate a lot of what we're reading from Nehemiah to what's going on with Israel today. And just today I was looking in the news and there was a man, a reporter, who had worked for AP, Associated Press, for many years, and he was blowing the whistle on them. He had quit the job, and he was talking about how AP has been under the thumb and the control of Hamas ever since 2005. And that when they are reporting on the news of what's going on in Gaza, Hamas intimidates and threatens them and says, "Oh, you need to leave that detail out. Oh, you need to report this. How many Palestinian civilians died and how many IDF soldiers died." And basically, they're under the thumb and under the control of Hamas, and have been for many years, and do it gladly. They're on the side of Hamas. They take the viewpoint of Hamas, a terrorist organization that is Nazi-like in the way they treat the Jewish people. So they use the propaganda machine to spin their narrative and to spin their story and to generate all kinds of hatred against Jews globally, especially through the news media. And so this is an ancient tactic, the mocking, the scorning, the psychological warfare against the Jewish people. We see it then and we see it today. Then we go on in the story, and in verse 4, chapter 4, verse 4, Nehemiah said, prays. He says, "Hear us, O God, for we are being mocked. May their scoffing fall back on their own heads, and may they themselves become captives in a foreign land. Do not ignore their guilt. Do not blot out their sins, for they have provoked you to anger here in the presence of the builders." And it goes on to say in verse 8, they all made plans to come and fight against Jerusalem and to bring about confusion there. But we prayed to our God and guarded the city day and night to protect ourselves. So if you've ever been to Israel, you will see IDF soldiers everywhere, in the bus station in Jerusalem, throughout the city, and as you travel through the country, you will see IDF soldiers with they sling their rifles across their shoulder. I don't know what they are, if they're MK-47s or what kind of a rifle it is, but they have to protect themselves day and night. And even the residents that live in biblical Judea, Samaria, the people who herd the sheep, who grow the olives on the olive groves, and who are farming, they have to defend themselves. All the major little communities, Jewish communities, have a wall built around them, and you have to go through a security gate to be able to get in. And the wall is there to protect them because they're under constant attack from hostile Arabs, from terrorists. And it goes on to say in verse 23, "During this time, none of us, not I, nor my relatives, nor my servants, nor the guards who were with me, ever took off our clothes. We carried our weapons with us at all times, even when we went for water." Some things never change. The hostility, the hatred, the anger, the persecution against the Jews was going on then, and it goes on today. And the anti-Semitism is just a disgrace. It is Shocking, horrible. Jews that are being attacked in major cities throughout Europe and in Canada. And there was a Jewish American who was attacked here in the US just this last week. They like blew up his car and then painted words about, to kill the IDF. It's like we're living in Nazi Germany during the late 1930s and early 1940s. They also showed footage. Hamas released footage of video that was taken of two hostages that are still barely alive. They're just skeletons. David Avyartar, or Avyartar David, looks like a Holocaust survivor. He's so skinny, he's just a skeleton with some skin around the bones with no muscle left. It's just horrifying to see how horrendous these monsters have treated the Jewish people. So the anti-Semitism is huge, the anti-Zionism is huge, and it really is, to me, a big sign that we are coming into the end of days. So I want to share an article with you from Prophecy News Watch. And the article is entitled Dividing Israel, Defying God, the World's Dangerous Path Toward Judgment. So this was published on August the 2nd in Prophecy News Watch. And here's the article. This September, the world will take one more dangerous step toward disaster. At the United Nations General Assembly, a growing coalition of nations, once counted as friends of Israel, will formally push to recognize a Palestinian state. Canada, France, the United Kingdom, nations who once stood against terrorism, are now preparing to reward it with legitimacy, flags, and UN seats. Make no mistake, this is not about peace. It's about power. It's about appeasing an ideology that has raised its children to hate Jews and murder Israelis. And it's about something even more sobering for believers. This is another step to fulfilling Bible prophecy. The major powers behind the push. France, co-chairing a UN summit with Saudi Arabia, has confirmed it will recognize a Palestinian state this September. Canada, once a bold ally of Israel, has caved under pressure, linking recognition to vague reforms within the Palestinian Authority. And the UK has issued an ultimatum. Either Israel halts its operations in Gaza and abandons future annexation efforts, or London will proceed with recognition. These decisions are not occurring in isolation. Ireland, Norway, Spain, Slovenia, and others joined the chorus in 2024. By this fall, more than 147 of the 193 UN member states will recognize a Palestinian state, roughly 75% of the global community. In other words, the world is uniting to divide the land of Israel. Dividing the land equals defying the Lord. For those who take the word of God seriously, this is no small diplomatic debate. Scripture warns repeatedly that dividing the land of Israel is a direct provocation against God's purposes. In Joel chapter 3, verse 2, it is written, "I will gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. There I will put them on trial for dividing up my land." And in Zechariah chapter 12, verse 3, "On that day I will make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people, and all who try to lift it will hurt themselves." In their rush to impose a solution, the nations are sowing the seeds of divine wrath. They believe they are peacemakers, but in reality they are playing with fire. Eternal fire. This international movement eerily resembles the prophesied global alignment against Jerusalem. And though the final chapter of history has not yet arrived, we are watching the table being set. Practical and moral dangers of a Palestinian state. This is not just spiritually reckless, it's politically insane. Here are five reasons why the creation of a Palestinian state in today's conditions will only lead to more violence, not peace. 1. A generation taught to hate. The Palestinian Authority has spent decades glorifying violence, naming schools after terrorists, and broadcasting genocidal messages on state-run media. The children of Gaza and the West Bank have not been raised for peace. They've been raised for martyrdom. Creating a state under this education system is not justice. It is state-sponsored hatred. 2. Terrorism will get closer, not further. After Israel withdrew from Gaza in 2005, it got rockets in return. Do we really believe that creating a terror state right next to Israel, right next to Jerusalem, will bring quiet? Recognition will embolden radicals, not restrain them. The front line will move from the border to the bedroom communities of Tel Aviv. 3. The Palestinian Authority pays killers. Yes, you read that right. The PA operates a pay-for-slay policy, giving monthly stipends to the families of terrorists who kill Jews. This isn't just an evil practice. It's taxpayer-funded jihad. And yet the West is rushing to bless this regime with full statehood. 4. The West is rewarding bloodshed. Hamas attacked Israel on October 7, 2023, slaughtering 1,200 people and kidnapping over 250. In response, what has the international community done? Sanctioned Israel, condemned its defense, and now rewarded the ideology that made those attacks possible by granting its supporters the keys to a nation. 5. No real difference between PA and Hamas. Let's be clear. While Hamas fires the rockets, the Palestinian Authority writes the checks and cheers from the sidelines. The ideological difference is minimal. Both parties reject the Jewish state's right to exist. Both promote return fantasies that mean the destruction of Israel. Recognition won't elevate moderates. It will hand radicals a microphone. 6. Jerusalem will be the next battleground. A recognized Palestinian state will not be satisfied with the West Bank. The heart of their campaign has always been Jerusalem, particularly East Jerusalem and the Temple Mount. Once statehood is secured, international pressure will mount to divide the holy city. That, according to Zechariah 14, is the line God himself will not allow the nations to cross without consequences. The clock is ticking. We are living in days of global deception. What is being sold as peace is, in fact, the reward of terrorism. What is being presented as diplomacy is, in truth, a direct challenge to God's covenant with Israel. The nations of the earth may gather to vote, legislate, and divide, but the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will not be mocked. His promises still stand. And those who seek to divide what he has declared indivisible will find themselves facing something far more fearsome than public opinion, the judgment of the Lord of hosts. Let the church be watchful. Let the people of God be vocal. And let every believer remember the fate of nations is not determined in the United Nations, but in the throne room of heaven.
Yevarekha Adonai Vishmarekha Yayeh Adonai Panavilakha Vikunneka Yisa Adonai Panav Eleka Vayasein Leka Leka Shalom.
the Aaronic blessing from Numbers chapter 6, 24 to 26. Adonai bless you and keep you. Adonai make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. Adonai lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.